नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। क्लास श्रीमद् भागवतम सेकंड कैंटो सेकंड चैप्टर टेक्स्ट 7। कस्त्वाम् त्वनद्वित्त परानुचिन्ताम् रीते पशु नशतिम् नाम कुर्यात् पश्यञ्जनम् पतितम् वैतरन्नाम् सकर्मजान परितापान जुषानम्। Translation: Who else but the gross materialists will neglect transcendental thought and take to the non-permanent names only? Seeing the mass of people fallen in the rivers of suffering as the consequence of acquiring the results of their own work. As the consequence of accruing the result of their own work. Please repeat after me. Who else but the gross materialists will neglect such transcendental thought and take to the non-permanent names only? Seeing the mass of people fallen in the river of suffering as the consequences of accruing the results of their own work. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada: In the Vedas it is said that persons who are attached to demigods to the exclusion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are like the animals who follow the herdsman even though they are taken to the slaughterhouse. The materialists, like animals, also do not know how they are being misdirected by neglecting the transcendental thought of the Supreme Personality. No one can remain vacant of thought. It is said that an idle brain is the devil's workshop, because a person who cannot think in the right way must think of something which may bring about disaster. The materialists are also always worshipping some minor demigods, although this is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 7:20. As long as a person is illusioned by material gains, he petitions the respective demigods to draw some particular benefit, which is, after all, illusory and non-permanent. The enlightened transcendentalist is not captivated by such illusory things. Therefore, he is always absorbed in the transcendental thought of the Supreme in different stages of realization, namely Brahma, Paramatma and Bhagavan. In the previous verse, it is suggested that one should think of the Super Soul, which is one step higher than the impersonal thought of Brahma, as it was suggested in the case of contemplating the Virata Roop of the Personality of Godhead. Intelligent persons who can see properly may look into the general condition of the living entities who are wandering in the cycle of 8,400,000 species of life, as well as in different classes of human beings. It is said that there is an everlasting belt of water called the river Baitarani at the entrance of the plutonic planet of Jamraj, who punishes sinners in different manners. After being subjected to such sufferings, a sinner is awarded a particular species of life according to his deeds in the past. Such living entities as are punished by the Jamraj are seen in different varieties of condition of life. Some of them are in heaven and some of them are in hell. Some of them are brahmanas and some of them are misers. But no one is happy in this material world, and all of them are either class A, B or C prisoners suffering because of their own deeds. The Lord is impartial to the circumstances of the sufferings of the living entities, but to one who takes shelter of his lotus feet, the Lord gives proper protection, and he takes such a living entity back home, back to Godhead. So, a devotee must be intelligent. Actually, unless and until one has intelligence, one cannot become a devotee. Intelligence actually means, the definition of intelligence is the faculty to reason. We have the ability to reason, that is, we can correlate our experiences. That is, that the faculty of correlating one's experiences and draw some conclusion is called reasoning. Now, more intelligent one is, the more he can, better he can reason. The more intelligent one is, the better he can reason. And the first thing that we have to reason in order to become a devotee, that whether we can enjoy in the material platform. After all, everyone will agree, Jai Shri Shri Guru Nitai. After all, everyone will agree to the fact that we want to enjoy. No one will deny that fact, excepting some crazy people. Like there was one such crazy people yesterday who said that he wants to finish everything. He wants to finish himself. There is, because he doesn't know that there is some enjoyment in this. There is some real enjoyment. He actually, when people become totally disappointed in their endeavor to enjoy, then they become so frustrated that they want to finish off everything. Like, it's not that he doesn't want to enjoy, and he tried to enjoy, but he tried to enjoy in the wrong direction. In whichever direction he tried to enjoy, he suffered. He thought, probably when he was a young boy, he thought that he would enjoy by smoking cigarettes. And he smoked cigarettes, he didn't enjoy, he suffered out of smoking cigarettes. Right? Then he thought most really by drinking alcohol he's going to enjoy. And he suffered even more. Then he thought by probably taking hashish he's going to enjoy. He suffered even more. And then he thought probably by taking LSD or heroin and cocaine he's going to enjoy. And then his brain got totally fried and we can see the outcome of it. So that is the materialistic people's endeavor for enjoyment. It's not that they don't want to enjoy. After all, everybody wants to enjoy, but nobody knows how to enjoy. So the devotees are the people, those who realize the fact that there is no enjoyment in the material platform. And then only one can become a devotee, not otherwise. Otherwise, why should one become a devotee? Who likes to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning? Who likes to stop eating all kinds of food that they were habituated from their, practically from their birth? Who likes to give up all the habits? And then on top of that, who likes to reject all these wonderful arrangements that the material nature has made today? The modern civilization has made in the material nature. So many different kinds of enjoyments. So a material, unless and until one has a great and deep conviction that there is a way to enjoy in the right direction, he cannot possibly become a devotee. So that is the thing, I consider that's the most important thing about becoming a devotee. Unless and until one has that intelligence. Of course, it's not that everybody has to have the first-hand experience of how one must suffer in the material nature. And then he should become a devotee. That I don't believe. That point is actually not correct. Sometimes people think that they did not suffer enough to become a devotee. That means they didn't have the practical experience of suffering. And then only they will become devotees. Like in India people say that, well, I am not old enough to become a devotee. The guy is 65 years old, he's practically in his deathbed, and he feels that he is not old enough to become a devotee. Or they think that, well, my life is fine, you have become a devotee, probably you suffered very much in your life. But I am enjoying, my father earns 100 marks a month, and he is maintaining the family of five, and I'm enjoying. Why are you saying that I'm not enjoying? So that is a very, very stupid conclusion. Now, experiences can be gathered in three different ways. The most intelligent people come to the conclusion just by hearing. Intelligent people learn by hearing. The less intelligent people learn by seeing. And a stupid ass learns by going through the experience himself. So, and unfortunately the asses cannot become devotees. So those who think that they are going to first experience and then join the movement, they can never join actually. And if they think that they will experience suffering first and then they will become a devotee. No. It's best is to learn by hearing. I heard that no one enjoys in the material nature. So I can consider who is telling me that, and when I hear that that truth is coming from a person like Prabhupada, then I should not have any doubt. Because when I see the person who himself does not have anything to reject the material enjoyment, or a person who does not have any reason to lie to me. So when he says that there is no enjoyment in the material nature, then it is intelligent enjoyment in the material nature. So, at first we may not believe in whatever we are hearing, but when we consider the source, the person who is giving us that knowledge, giving us that instruction, and if we feel that the person is bona fide, the person is not going to lie to us, then obviously we can come to the conclusion that yes, there is no enjoyment in the material nature. Then one may be less intelligent and think that, well, I cannot really accept that. Like he said, and I must accept, that is not proper. Then he may go out and he can see that others are also suffering and how they are suffering. So he can come to the conclusion that, well, I am also going to suffer. So that is also quite intelligent conclusion. But those who think, let me suffer first, they have been suffering because they were not smart enough. Now I am going to be very smart and I will really enjoy. That guy, he got $1 million. But he's a fool. He inherited the money from his father and he doesn't know how to utilize the money. So that's why he could not enjoy. But I am going to enjoy when I get $1 million. So he tries to make $1 million. And he thinks that when he gets $1 million, he is going to use that money in such a smart way that he is going to enjoy. So this is a very, very stupid attitude. I mean, we have to understand that there is no enjoyment in the material nature. And if we are not convinced, we can reason it by our intelligence. Let us see whether anybody enjoyed. And there are so many examples. I mean, the world history, especially Eastern history, Indian history, is full of such examples. Like there are so many kings, those who have rejected their kingdom for spiritual enlightenment, for spiritual knowledge. Buddha was the son of a king. He rejected his kingdom and it took him just one journey outside his palace. Buddha went out of his palace for the first time. And he saw an old man, he saw a diseased person, and he saw a dead body. For the first time in his life, he saw an old man, a diseased person and a dead body. And he realized that that is the ultimate outcome of his materialistic endeavors. So he immediately stopped the chariot and left. There are so many kings in India, those who have rejected their kingdom. And there are so many kings have been described in Srimad Bhagavatam. King Rishabhdev. So many kings. Yudhishthir Maharaj, Ranti Dev, the Janak Raj, Bali Maharaj. So all these people, they were kings. But they, at certain point of time, they said, finished. You know, I don't want this. Now, let me just make advancement for my spiritual life. So that is the intelligence. And we at least can become intelligent by their example. Like, no matter whatever happens, I'm not going to become, or none of us are going to become a king like Rishabhdev. None of us are going to become a king like Bali Maharaj. Of course, Bali Maharaj did not give up his kingdom as such, but at least for the Lord, he sacrificed everything. And by that, he bound the Lord. Just by offering everything to the Lord, Bali Maharaj bound the Lord. And the Lord became obliged to become the gatekeeper of Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj's palace. Of course, the higher understanding is that the Lord took up the position of the gatekeeper of Bali Maharaj just in order to keep Bali Maharaj in the palace, not to let him come out of the palace. That is the conclusion of Sanatan Goswami. So, there are so many, I mean, we are not going to become even an insignificant fraction of the opulence that they had. So that is how they are, and they have rejected. So what to talk about us? Not only we have less limitations in regards to our assets, material opulence, but also physically we do not have that kind of ability. Like those kings, they could have 1,000 wives. I mean, to have 100 wives was just a common thing for those people. And the kings of the past, they used to have 100-200 wives. And nowadays we see that a man cannot even maintain one wife. He gets fried, and after 3 months they end up in a divorce. Right? So, I mean, compared to them, today's man is like an ant. And the way an ant tries to enjoy with a female ant, the same way we are trying to enjoy in this material nature. Like they were so powerful that they could dominate over the whole earth planet. They were so powerful that they could even elevate themselves to the heavenly planets. Some kings, they elevated themselves to the planets for higher enjoyments. We cannot even conceive of that. But still, we can see that they were not satisfying. So if we have a slight bit of intelligence, we must understand that there is no enjoyment in the material nature. Then where is the real enjoyment? And very fortunately we found out where the real enjoyment is. And the real enjoyment is in spiritual life. Real enjoyment lies in becoming a devotee. And that is, when you become a devotee, when we establish a loving relationship with the Lord, then we begin to get the taste of that enjoyment. Anything that we do in relationship with the Lord is a source of enjoyment. Talking about the Lord is enjoyable. Hearing about the Lord is enjoyable. Thinking about the Lord is enjoyable. What to talk about? Being with the Lord. So that is the highest form of enjoyment. To be with the Lord. And even higher, when we have got the taste of enjoyment by being with the Lord, then it is appreciated, then it is understood that even higher enjoyment is to be separated from the Lord. Vipralambha, prem. A love for the Lord in separation is the highest. Anyway, that we cannot, of course, understand now. But at least we can understand that there is real, the real enjoyment is there in thinking about the Lord. The real enjoyment is there in talking about the Lord. The real enjoyment is there in remembering the Lord. So, that is the very basic understandings of devotional life. But the problem begins, actually it's not that the devotees' lives are free from problems. In devotees' lives also there are many, many problems. And the real problem begins when in spite of being a devotee, one goes to enjoy outside. In spite of being a devotee, when he thinks that there is some enjoyment outside of devotional service. That is the supreme irony, the greatest misfortune. Actually, that's why it is very important to have the association of the devotees. Because in association of the devotees, we get the taste of what real enjoyment is. When you're in association of devotees, when you hear about Krishna, we enjoy. When you talk about Krishna, we enjoy. What to talk about when you think about Krishna? And what to talk about when you're with Krishna? So, as a devotee, we must be very, very careful not to fall down. And fall down means trying to enjoy outside of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gave us the understanding that material life, in material nature there is no enjoyment, but in spiritual nature there is enjoyment. And that's why we have come to Krishna consciousness. That's why we shaved up our head, we are wearing neck beads, we are wearing saffron clothes. Because we have realized that the real enjoyment is in Krishna consciousness. But in spite of that, if we think that there is some enjoyment outside, after being in the movement for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, if we think that there is some enjoyment outside, and then automatically he begins to feel that maybe I made a mistake becoming a devotee. Or he bewilders himself to think that I can become a devotee at the same time enjoy material nature. I mean, this is the biggest dilemma. And the problem begins when he tries to enjoy on the quiet. He thinks that nobody is going to catch me, let me just go and do these things. Or he tries to justify his material enjoyment by different names. For the sake of preaching, I have to go and see a movie. For the sake of preaching, I have to wear karmic clothes. For the sake of preaching, I have to grow a beard. So this is how Maya actually deludes us. And then gradually we deviate. But that's why it is so important to be in the association of the devotees and give respect to devotees' instructions. Like we should never think that I am so big that nobody else can give me advice. On the other hand, we must be ready to receive advice even if it is coming from a karmi. Often it happens, like a karmi says a thing and it really makes a lot of sense. And we think, yes, that's true. And we have to be ready at least to take good advice from good source. Like if I'm doing something wrong and if some devotee comes and tells me, Maharaj, I think that's not very nice what you are doing. At that time I can react in two different ways. I can either tell him that, who are you to advise me? Do you know that I am a sannyasi and you are just a householder? So I can react in that way. But that is very, very bad. A Vaishnav is a Vaishnav. It doesn't really matter who he is, in what order of life he is. And a Vaishnav's advice should be accepted as the advice of Krishna. unless, of course, he doesn't have any motivation. But still then, if he has any doubt, then he can go and ask somebody else, look, I was doing that, and that particular devotee told me that I shouldn't do it, so what do you think? And then if other Vaishnavas also feel that I shouldn't do it, then my business, my duty is to refrain from that activities, abstain from that activity. So that's why it is very important that we take good advice from the Vaishnavas. After all, we have our intelligence. We can see what is right and what is wrong. And Prabhupada gave us the formula, very strict, very simple. Follow the four regulative principles and chant Hare Krishna. That is the very basic instructions that Prabhupada gave for every one of us. So what is the difficulty in following these principles? Yes, it's difficult, because as long as we have the body, it's difficult to follow these regulative principles. But still we have to struggle, and that is the austerity. Spiritual life is based on austerity. Without austerity there cannot be spiritual life. But austerity doesn't mean sitting up in the Himalayas in the minus 60 degrees centigrade. That is not austerity for us. That may have been the austerity for some people at certain point of time. But our austerities are performing these four regulative principles, following these four regulative principles. That is our austerity. Prabhupada said that is our austerity. So we don't have to look for some more severe austerities. Like I know people, those who very strictly observe Chaturmash, that is not, you know, like eating once a day, and that also without spices, ghee or salt. Food without, just some boiled rice and dal, without any spice or salt or sugar, anything. Or some chapatis and dal. Growing beard for 4 months. And like that. But then, I have also seen that same person falling down in illicit sex. So what's the point in performing that austerity? Actually, we did not perform the real austerity that we are supposed to perform. We undertook some more severe austerities, but our heart didn't get purified, we didn't line up in the same principles, and then finally fall down. Actually, we do not have to make any extra endeavor for our spiritual life. Rupa Goswami is called that ottahar. Ottahar literally means eating too much. If you eat too much, then what happens? Eating is nice. But if you eat too much, then you end up with a cramp in the stomach to begin with, and then indigestion, and then run to the toilet 24 times. Right? That is called ottahar. And if you do that about spiritual life, doing something too much, over-endeavor, that actually has a negative result. The food is actually meant for giving strength to our body. But when you end up with overeating and end up with diarrhea, dysentery, then your body becomes weak. Instead of where the food was supposed to nourish the body, but instead the body became even weaker. So what's the point in taking that kind of food? So we have to do the right thing to the right measure. That is what is the most important thing. And we do not have to do anything beyond that. Just follow the four regulative principles, chant Hare Krishna. And then along with chanting Hare Krishna, the most important thing is offenselessly. Don't commit offense. Don't commit, most important of that is don't commit Vaishnava Aparadha. That's the first offense. Don't commit Vaishnava Aparadha. Don't think that any Vaishnava is inferior to you or so on and so forth. Every Vaishnava is a servant of Krishna. Let us consider that every living entity is Krishna's children. Right? Every living entity. So the way a father loves his children, the same way Krishna loves every living entity. Now out of these living entities, some living entities, those who are serving Krishna, how dear they must be to Krishna. And if we commit offense at their lotus feet, thinking that Krishna cares only for me and Krishna doesn't care about anybody else, that is going to be very, very dangerous. Tar moddhe Vaishnav hoy hati mata. Mahaprabhu compared the Vaishnava apradha to a mad elephant offense. If a mad elephant walks into the garden, then what happens? A mad elephant destroys the whole garden. Now, in the garden of our heart, we are actually growing the devotional creeper. We got the seed from the spiritual master, and we planted that seed in our heart, and we are watering and taking care of that seed so that it grows, it sprouts into a seedling, and then gradually it grows. So we are taking care of that seed. We are taking care of that devotional creeper. But if a mad elephant walks into that garden of our heart, then what is going to happen? The whole garden is just going to be devastated. Actually, often we see that generally devotees, those who have trouble in devotional life, is because of their offenses to the other Vaishnavas. So we have to be very careful in our dealings with Vaishnavas. And when a Vaishnava gives an advice, so we must be very respectful to that advice. After all the other Vaishnavas are our well-wishers, so why should we not take their advice? And after all, what is there to lose? If somebody tells me to become more fixed up in my devotional life, what is the loss in that? But if I think that who is this guy to tell me to become more fixed up? Doesn't he know that I am such a big devotee? No, actually, we have to become humble. And that is why Mahaprabhu put so much emphasis on Trinadopi Shunichena Taroruiva Shahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sarahari. How can we chant the holy name all the time? How is it possible to chant the holy name all the time? That's the goal of our life, to chant the holy name all the time. But how can we do that? We can do that only when we become more humble than a blade of grass. Trinadopi sunichena taruriva shohishnuna, when we become more tolerant than a tree. And amani, desiring no respect for ourselves, and manadena, offering all the respects to everybody else. Then only we can chant kirtaniya sadahari. We are here to do that. To do that kirtaniya sadahari, chant the holy name of the Lord all the time, be engaged in service all the time, in being with the Lord all the time. So that's what we are here for. And we can do that only when we develop that mood. Trinadopi sunichena taruriva shahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Actually, spiritual life is very, very precious, and we have to take care that we are making advancement in our spiritual life. We have to realize that our spiritual life is not dependent on anything material. It is not that only when we have a big temple, then only we can become devotees. It is not that only when we have such and such position, then only we can render devotional service, not otherwise. Devotional service is actually ahaituki. The word ahaituki means devotional service is not dependent on any other consideration. Devotional service does not depend on anything material. Like the other day, I just remembered one. I was giving an example in Austria, in a meeting, in a lecture program. Somebody asked that question, that whether devotional service is dependent on material consideration. And I just remembered one example that I read when I was a child, actually. It was about, I think it's from, anyway, so the example was that a man decided not to go to the church because he didn't have a pair of shoes. His shoes were all torn. I'm sure you all must have read that also. His shoes were torn and he didn't want to go to the church, thinking that, you know, I don't have good enough pair of shoes to wear, so I won't go to the church. And so he decided not to go to the church. And then he saw one man who doesn't have legs, and he was going to the church, just crawling on the road. And then he realized that, oh, I didn't have a pair of shoes, and that's why I didn't want to go to the church. And this man, he doesn't even have a leg. He doesn't have his legs, but still he is trying to go to the church. So our love for the Lord, or our devotional spirit, is not dependent on anything material. Our spiritual life is solely dependent on our spiritual enthusiasm. Spiritual life is not dependent on anything outside, because it's an inner development. Everything may be taken away from me, but if I develop my love for Krishna, if I want to develop my love for Krishna, who can stop me? That's why it's so exemplary. I feel often I think of those devotees in Russia, and I try to imagine how they must be feeling, those who are going through so much difficulty, so much torture. But I can see that, or at least I can feel, that they are not actually affected by the torture. On the other hand, their love for Krishna is becoming stronger and stronger. The more this Russian government is trying to stop them from becoming a devotee, more they're torturing them for not to become devotees, the stronger they're becoming. Because more they're pushing them from outside, more they're going inside, and more they're experiencing their love for Krishna. Actually, it is a mercy. It is a mercy. And I'm sure when Krishna puts one in that kind of situation, Krishna provides him also with that conviction by which they remain fixed up, they don't give up. That was also very obvious in early Christianity. The Christians were also very badly persecuted. And those days, if anybody was found to be a follower of Jesus, he was either burnt alive, crucified, or stoned to death. But still they didn't give up. And that's why Christianity is existing still today. More they tried to stop Christianity to spread, the more actually they were adding the fuel to increase that fire of desire to spread it. On the other hand, when now that Christianity has so much opulence and so many big churches, they don't have the spirit to preach, and they themselves do not practice. So if someday we are put into a difficult test, if someday we have to go through a lot of suffering, then we must understand that this is the time when Krishna is actually giving us the mercy to pursue with our Krishna consciousness. Someday individually all of us will have to face that. Someday a time is going to come when our bodies are going to become old, our bodies are going to become diseased, and finally we have to die. And then it is difficult to remain fixed up in Krishna consciousness. It will be very, very difficult to remain fixed up when our body is totally devastated with all kinds of disease when the mind is totally disturbed by all these physical difficulties, then how can we maintain our Krishna consciousness? And that is the time when we have to become fixed up. So a time is going to come when we all have to face the test. Now the time may come individually, or the test may come collectively. But whatever happens, we must push on with the spirit of Krishna consciousness. So often we think that our devotional life is actually dependent on so many material criteria or material considerations. Some new devotee thinks that when I become the temple commander, then I'll become a big devotee. Right? My devotional life will become very, very wonderful. I'll become a pure devotee when I become a temple commander. Then he becomes a temple commander. Then he thinks that temple commander is not actually good enough. I should become a temple president. Then I'll become a pure devotee. And this way it goes on. So finally we think of becoming, if we carry on in that direction, then we are going in the wrong direction. So we have to understand that wherever we are, we have to utilize the opportunity to render devotional service to Krishna. Doesn't matter wherever we are, in what body we are in. Who knows what body we'll get in our next life. But our mood should be, even if we are born as an insect, but still let us render devotional service to Krishna. It is possible. Actually, in most cases, now that we have become devotees, we'll continue in our next life. Even if we can't make it back to Godhead in our next life, then it's guaranteed that in our next life also we'll become a devotee. And even if we don't get a human body, we must continue with our devotional service. Like Bharat Maharaj, he got the body of a deer because of his excessive attachment to a deer. He got the body of a deer. But even as a deer, he maintained his devotional mood. He lived, immediately he left his family, his dear mother and dear father. And he went to a hermitage where the saintly people were living. So he couldn't live with them, but he was living close to them. And he didn't indulge himself in sense gratification. Now what is the sense gratification of a deer? To have some nice green soft grass. That is the only sense gratification that deer could have. And he rejected that also. He would not even take soft green grass. He would take just some dry leaves. And that's how he was performing austerities and training up his senses, not to become excessively attached to enjoyment. So, by chance, if we have to get a body less than a human form, then we must push on with our devotional service. So we have to become very, very fixed up and convinced that this is the thing that we are going to pursue, and we are not going to allow anything else to interfere in our devotional life. Anybody can become a pure devotee. But at the same time, it has been pointed out in Bhagavatam, in Bhagavad Gita, that not that many people will become devotees. Anybody can become a devotee, but many people will not become devotees. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid jatati siddhaye jatutam opi siddhanam kaschin maam vetti tattatah. Out of thousands and thousands of people, rarely one or two will aspire for perfection. And out of thousands of such people, those who are trying for perfection, rarely one or two will become perfect. We must understand that we must push on.
We must try to become a pure devotee. That's why we all are here. And to become a pure devotee does not mean attaining some material position. It is not that only when we become a GBC or a sannyasi or a guru we become a pure devotee, not otherwise. We must understand that our becoming a pure devotee does not actually depend on any material condition. That's why it has been pointed out, sarvapadhi binir muktam tat paratena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchyate. Sarvapadhi binir muktam. The first criterion, the first consideration of devotional service is that we have to become free from all designations. And Mahaprabhu said that, Naham vipra nacha naropati napi, na vaishya na shudra. Mahaprabhu said that, I am not a Brahmin, I am not a king or a kshatriya, I am not a vaishya nor a shudra. I am not a householder, I am not a sannyasi, I am not a vanaprastha or a brahmachari. Kintu pradhan nikhilo purnam vita rasabde, Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayo Dasho Anudasho Dasho Asmi. Mahaprabhu is giving the criterion of pure devotional service. I am neither of this. I am not a brahmachari, vanaprasthi, grihastha, sannyasi. I am not a brahmin or kshatri or a vaishya or shudra. But I am the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the lover of the gopis. That is the only criterion. We have to simply become the servant of the servant of the servant. We haven't come here, or our goal of life is not to become the master of the masters, but our goal is to become the servant of the servant. So it is not difficult. No one can stop us from becoming a servant. And that mood will enhance only when you become free from all designations. Sarvapadhi binir muktam. Tat paruktena nirmalam. Then only our heart will become purified. Actually, why do we become free from designations? Because the designations are actually impurities in our heart. Designations are actually fuel to our false ego. We think, oh, I am this, and immediately our false ego is inflated. Like Trivanga Prabhu was doing yesterday, he was inflating the balloon, Dr. Frog. So these are actually upadhi. I am this. One pump. He pumps in that pump by his foot, and his balloon in the stomach swells up, and it goes on and on. More upadhi means more air in our false ego. Now let us give a pinprick to our false ego, and let us explode that false ego. Let us explode that balloon of false ego with a pinprick. Once and for all, let's get rid of all designations. Tatparatena nirmalam, and then only we become qualified to render service to the Lord of our senses with our senses. Actually, senses always want to do something. It is the business of the senses to want to do something. So let us satisfy our senses once and for all just by using them in the service of the master of the senses. So it is not difficult, but we have to be on the right track. If we don't, if we deviate, then we'll fall down. Actually, there's no guarantee that we will not fall down, no matter how advanced we are. Even Brahma falls down, even pure devotees can fall down. So what to talk about ourselves, those who didn't even enter into the region of devotional life.
We are simply struggling somehow to enter into the devotional life. So what to talk about ourselves? And if we do that, then Krishna will help us. And time and time again, there are so many examples cited by Mahaprabhu himself and Mahaprabhu's devotees, like Haridas Thakur, who was such an elevated devotee. But Haridas Thakur, displaying the mood of his humility, he said, Purisher kit hoite muishe lohishto, jagai madhai hoite muishe papishto. I am more fallen than a worm in the stool, and I am more sinful than jagai and madhai. Now the Namacharya, Haridas Thakur, is saying that. So what to talk about ourselves? If he is displaying a mood as humble as that, then what to talk about ourselves? What kind of mood we should develop? And then only we can become fixed up in devotional life, not otherwise. By thinking that I am the greatest, we can never become fixed up in devotional life. We can enter into the devotional kingdom in the spiritual sky by becoming smaller than the smallest, not by becoming greater than the greatest. That's also very significant from that quote from Bible. A camel will pass through an eye of a needle, but a rich man will not be able to enter into the kingdom of God. Like, rich man means a puffed up man, a person who thinks that I am the greatest. He'll not be able to enter into the kingdom. But a humble man who has become smaller than the smallest, he only can pass through the eye of a needle. So we have, let us become as small as that, even smaller than that. Actually, our identity is 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. So what's the difficulty in becoming small? Actually, the more we become situated in our constitutional position, we come closer to 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. And when we do become 1/10th, as small as 1/10,000th part of the hair, tip of the hair, then we become qualified to enter into the spiritual sky. Because the whole back to Godhead is of that dimension. So unless we become as small as 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair, we cannot pass through the gate. Because that is the size of the gate, the spiritual sky. And then when you enter into the spiritual sky, then you develop a spiritual form. Hare Krishna. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Can somebody repeat from the front? Naturally. If you have faith in Krishna, then how can you lose faith in Vaishnavas? The ones, those are representatives of Krishna. So, we should try not to lose faith on Vaishnavas, because Vaishnavas are actually representatives of Krishna, expansions of Krishna, servants of Krishna. Is that clear? I see, I get it. You see, in the initial stage, one has the faith in Krishna, but one may not have the faith in Vaishnavas. But that is a very low-class devotional platform. It's called Kanishtha Adhikar. Kanishtha means low-class, right? And that is the Kanishtha Adhikar Bhakta. One who has faith in Krishna, but doesn't have faith in Vaishnavas. But the middle class, the little more elevated, above low class is middle class, right? The middle class is Madhyam Adhikar. And that, in that platform, one has faith, one has love for Krishna, friendship for devotees,
right? Compassion for innocent and disregard for the demons. That is the Madhyamika platform. So, if you, when one comes to this middle class, he develops faith on the Vaishnava. Right? But in spite of coming into the middle class, developing the faith on Vaishnavas, if he loses faith on Vaishnavas, then we have to understand that he is actually deviating. He is losing faith in Krishna. Yeah. I see.
That's because of Maya.
Right? We have to see that actually fault is with me, not in others. At least you have to practice that, try to. Because ultimately, you see, in spiritual sky, you can't find faults with others. Right? So, let us practice so that we can become qualified to enter into the spiritual sky. Let's not find faults with others. Because in spiritual sky, everything happens by Krishna's desire. So let us see that everything is happening in Krishna by according to Krishna's desire. Right? And let us improve ourselves. That is the thing, most important thing. Let me try to find what is the problem with me. And let me become more and more fixed up. Let me become more and more effective in my preaching. Let me become more fixed up in spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. So this is how we make advancement. Because finding faults with each other, this fault finding, and you see, fault finding also has another tail with it, right? That's called backbiting. So this fault finding and backbiting, you know, like, it is very detrimental to the spiritual life. So let us become, one should be outspoken, one should be honest. If you see that there is some defect in somebody, then go and tell him, or her, in your case, right? Or at least, you know, like, go to the authorities. If you see that somebody is doing something wrong, go to the authorities, because it is your duty to save him from falling down, right? So that you can do. That is not, you know, like, negative, right? But it should not be, you know, negative, that's my point. Always there are faults with others, and in a society some faults will become obvious. So we must point it out to them for their benefit. And they also should be willing to listen to. That's how it becomes a society. Any other? Yeah, Sachinanda. It is a river through which the spirit soul goes, because to enter into some place you have to take a bath. So you take the bath. Actually, Baitarani is the river that carries the departed spirit soul into the abode of Yamaraj. That is the understanding. It is the region between, you know, this earth planet and Jamraj's planet, when the living entity is going there. It's not quite Biraja. Biraja is, of course, different. It is, you can say, it is a reflection of Biraja. Yeah, it can be looked like that. You see, when the living entity goes back to Godhead, then he has to go through the Biraja river. Right? And this Biraja, sometimes, actually Biraja has been described as Karan ocean, causal ocean. Sometimes Biraja has been described as the last layer of Maya. Things like that, you know. But it is one region that you have to go through before you come to the spiritual sky. Right? Now, the same way, the reflection is there, what is Biraja? There, you know, outside of material universe, the reflection is in the form of Baitarani river, between the
earth planet and the planet of Yamaraj. And in Yamaraj's planet, one gets the dress up, right? One is forced to take up his shape, right? Like Tamakrishna Maharaj was telling yesterday, one is prepared there for his next body. According to his activities, the Jamadutas force him to do something, right? Somebody who ate a lot of garbage, who was very fond of eating, all kinds of unedible stuff, right? As a result of that, the Jamadutas force him to eat stool, right? In the beginning, he doesn't like it, right? Because stool is disgusting, yeah? No, I mean, especially, right? And it's disgusting to any human being. But then, when he's forced, then gradually he develops a taste for stool. Right? And then, he's transported into the next body. And in that body, he's simply looking for stool to eat it. Because, he has been conditioned. And also, Viraja can be described as a region of forgetfulness. You see, whatever we have, you see, in causal ocean we forget everything, right? And then we enter into the spiritual nature, right? Well, that is there, but you don't, then in the spiritual nature, Yogamaya takes care of it. So Yogamaya makes you forget the things that you don't need to remember, right? So in Viraja, in Vaitarani, the same sort of things happen. Like one forgets. And then he enters into that region of Yamaraj's abode. And there he is conditioned, right? To different, according to, his subtle body is given the shape. Or according to his subtle body shape, he develops his habits, right? And then in the next body, he gets to practice it. Tries to enjoy like a pig. The demigods, demigods are actually surrendered to Krishna, right? That's why Krishna protects the demigods. Narayan protects them. Now, sometimes, demons become more powerful, right? And they drive demigods out of their kingdom. And that's what Boli Maharaj did. Boli Maharaj drove the demigods out of their kingdom, heaven. And he took over the whole universe, right? Three planetary systems. Right? And then the mother of the demigods, right? Aditi, she performed the great severe austerities and prayed to the Lord to reinstate her children into their kingdom. So Lord appeared as Bamandev, right? And as Bamandev, he captured Bali Maharaj, right? And then, so that Bali Maharaj doesn't come out of that palace or the place where he put him, the Sutal planet. So he was guarding the gate also so that he doesn't come out and again cause trouble to the demigods. Any other questions? Yeah, always remember that you are the servant of the servants, right? Every Vaishnava is your master, and when they tell you to do something, you don't say that, "Why can't you do it yourself? Or let somebody else do it. Why should I do it?" Right? That's the best way to become Srinanda Pishnamacharya. And feel that if somebody tells you something bad, you remember that after all, I am just an insignificant spirit soul. My size is only 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. So why should I get offended? And actually they are offending this body. But I'm not this body, so why should I get offended? Actually, the key to everything is understanding that we are not our bodies. You know, everything is actually due to this body. I mean, if we realize that we are not this body, then we'll not have any desire for sense enjoyment, right? And when we have become free from that, I mean, practically 90% of our problems are solved, right? When you realize that we are not this body and all that this body wants, I don't actually have anything to do with that. And if you realize that you are not the body but you are a spirit soul, then only you can become Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. Then only you can become fully satisfied, right? Prasannatma means fully satisfied, one whose heart has become fully satisfied. And one becomes that only when one realizes that he is a spirit soul, right? And he is situated in the spiritual platform or the spiritual realization. And then you don't have any hankering and lamentation. Then you don't hanker for things that you do not have, and you do not lament for something that you have lost. Otherwise, in the material platform, we always are hankering and lamenting, isn't it? You think, even after we become devotees, we think that, oh, I don't have a pillow soft enough to sleep nicely, right? We are hankering, right? Or we are lamenting that, look, I saved the Mahaprasad and that guy came and just ate it up. So, but when you realize that we are actually spirit souls, and as a spirit soul we have everything. Do you have any lacking as a spirit soul? Do you lack anything as a spirit soul? No. Right? All your needs are for the body. Your spirit actually is fully satisfied, isn't it? Does your spirit soul need anything that you do not that you cannot have? All that you need, all that your spirit needs, is already there. Your spirit soul's biggest need is Krishna. He is there. He's sitting in your heart. Right? Your biggest need is to develop a loving relationship with Krishna. So you also like to love. So love Krishna. So it's so easy. Of course, I'm saying it's easy. Just to say, it's easy to say that, but it's actually very difficult. But we have to help each other in a society to make advancement. Right? Nobody is greater and no one is smaller. And that is the team spirit, right? In a football team, you can't say that the center forward is more important than the goalkeeper, right? In a team, everyone is equally important. In your body, you can't say your head is more important than your hand. Yes, your head may be more important to some extent, but when you function as a body, then every part of your body is equally important. So it's very important that we develop a team spirit in Krishna consciousness. We all are servants of Krishna, and let's just keep serving Krishna in order to become devotees of the Lord. Right? And then only you can become humble through Nadoti Suni Sena. You don't have to practice it that you lie down on the road and let everybody walk over you. That will happen automatically, naturally. Yes? To get rid of Brahma Hatta, Janikani Cha Papani, you get rid of sinful activities by circumambulating Tulasi, but not Vaishnava Aparad. There's a difference between Aparad and sin. Right? Aparad takes place in the spiritual platform, right? But sin takes place in the material platform.
Now, by circumambulating Tulasi, you get rid of your material sins, but you cannot get rid of your spiritual aparadha. That if you feel that you have committed some offense to someone, just go and, you know, ask that person to forgive you, right? That will help you to become humble and at the same time become free from aparadha. Like, it happens in a society. Prabhupada used to say that in a family the brothers fight, right? But then next moment they become friends, right? So it is a family, and it's a family of brothers and sisters, and there may be some fights sometimes. But if you feel that you have offended someone and you are wrong, right, then you go and ask for forgiveness. Right? Any other question? Let this be the last question. Or, okay, two last questions. Yeah. Translation, please. Well, we have to see that, you know, like, anything may happen to anyone. And actually Krishna is reminding us that don't think that you are big enough that you won't fall down. Right? Yeah, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu. Right? Yeah. And Vyavashayatmika Buddhi means the business intelligence, you know? Which means, you know, knowing what you should do and what you shouldn't do. Right? Like, if you don't act, right, carefully, then you may lose everything. So you have to be very careful. And what is our business? Our business is to go back to Krishna or become a servant of Krishna, render service to Krishna. So we have to be very careful, you know, like how we use our intelligence. And that is the Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. And saying that Vyavasayatmika Buddhi Samadhovna Vidhiyate. The ones, those who haven't taken to devotional service, they did not develop their right intelligence. Here it means right intelligence. Meaning, you know, the knowing what to do.